Hello, this is Api from Team Envious, and you are listening to TCR.
Okay, so let's start.
And welcome everyone to another edition of the Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports show. Episode 93 coming to you live from the Ticket Studios here in Dallas. My name is Tim K. I'll be one of your hosts for this journey. Alongside me, as always, my two best buds. You have Brett. Hello, Brett.
Hey, Tim.
And we have Anuj.
Hey, fam. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's wet. It's rainy. But we're glad to be here with the Ticket talking some esports. Let me run down what we are going to discuss here today. And of course, we always like to take Twitter questions or suggestions. So hit us up at the Center Ring on Twitter. At 8:50, we will do some e-news. That's not entertainment news. It's news about esports. Get it? Esports, e-news. It's hilarious. We will also hit up Twitter questions there. At 8:30, we will do some Overwatch League Stage 2 talk. At 8:10-ish, we will discuss the next big esport, right? That's like the number one question we always get. So I want to kind of discuss what we think might make that up. You have CSGO roster news going up at 7:50. Overwatch League will be up next around 7:30. But right now, I want to jump into the show, gentlemen, because we have a guest in studio with us. None other than the owner of Dallas Fuel and Team Envious. We have Hasro, or Mike. Is it Rufail, sir?
Got it.
Did I say that right?
Got it.
Excellent. Hello, sir, and welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's, like you said, wet and rainy, but...
Yep. I know your offices are right across the way. Did you go home, or did you just...
No.
Okay.
No, I stayed in the office. I'm in there until this time, just about...
Oh, really?
Anyway, yeah.
So how long have you been back in Dallas?
I officially landed permanently back in Texas, in Dallas, on November 6th.
Okay. And where were you? Where was Envious prior to that?
We were headquartered in Charlotte, uptown Charlotte, North Carolina.
So kind of a second home for you out there.
Yeah, you know, born and raised here. Then, you know, by means of, you know, family, moved around a little bit, went to school in North Carolina, and always missed Texas. So, you know, having an opportunity to buy that Overwatch League franchise here and bring our team here to Texas back home was a dream come true. So it worked out.
So during that process, did I guess in the Overwatch League buying process, did you hand Blizzard $20 million and said, I want Dallas, or did they say, here's some teams?
No, that's pretty much how it worked. It was like, hey, we want to go to Dallas. We want the Dallas franchise, and yeah, I think we were kind of the first to move on it. And, you know, if since the beginning of Overwatch, you know, when the game was in the beta phase, we were all in, you know, we were the first big major esports organization in the world to go head first in the fielding an Overwatch team. So, you know, from the beginning, we'd been, I think, great partners with Activision Blizzard and supporting a team and had a lot of success, loved the game. And I think they gave us their good graces to snag Dallas. So we jumped on it.
Was it hard having to transition from the Team Envious name to coming up with another branding for you guys?
It was very difficult. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of talks. You know, one of the, I crack jokes about it all the time because, you know, I was very, very keen on the Dallas Donkeys name, you know? Yeah, that was my...
We're glad you didn't go with
it. It's honestly a joke, but, you know, but at the end of the day, we thought, man, who wouldn't love to cheer for the Dallas Donkeys in the Overwatch League?
I wouldn't mind it.
You know what? I'm such a homer that I'd probably be all in.
I mean, that's just esports and gaming for you. You know, everybody likes to have a good laugh every now and then.
Well, so. You had Laser Kittens, right? That was an Overwatch League team prior to like Overwatch League and really kicking over.
FNRGFE team with the corn dog logo.
Yep.
I've seen that one. Yeah,
everybody, nobody called them FNRGFE. They just called them the corn dogs.
Were there any other names that were tossed around for you guys?
You know, we started thinking about some of the, you know, the cliche Texas names. I think the Dallas Desperados was up there. You know?
But they already had the AFL team.
You got the Cowboys, the Rangers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the Cowboys, the Rangers, and you know, the Stars and the Mavericks. I mean, that's like a theme. How Texas is that?
Yeah.
And so we wanted to break the theme a little bit. And
it's nothing generic like Outlaws or something.
Yeah.
I wasn't
trying to take any digs at all. Yeah. That's all you.
I'll take ownership.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is your vision for the league? Because this league got me really excited for esports because it's something just unconventional, like teams tied to a city.
Yeah.
So what is Hastro's vision of the league? Is it home and away games? Is it because that intrigues me.
Yeah, of course.
Like being able to go to a game with my son, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to give, you know, you guys and some of the listeners an idea. And we're actually required to have home and away games in season 3.
Oh.
So.
Okay. So I knew it was 2 years was the plan, and that is like a set goal now.
Yeah. I think I can freely say it now. It's pretty public, but, you know, we're trying to shoot for next year, but I don't think that's realistic at this point. For us, we'd be happy to do it. Like our organization is ready to bring the team here to Dallas. Trust me, we're ready to bring those guys here.
Talks of having your own arena, or are you renting out? How would that play out?
You know, we're still working on that. Details on that. Would love to come back in and chat with you guys when we have a little bit more on that. But we don't know exactly where it'll be located or how we're going to do it, whether we own it or the city works with us, or, you know, we work with another existing venue already.
I hear if you go to Arlington, you can pretty much make them pay for it. Arlington will sign off on any tax bill.
Well, look, I mean, you know, I think we've been talking to a lot of the different groups around here, including all the different cities. And I mean, I think Arlington's still a great place for sports here around DFW, you know.
Centrally located.
Yeah, centrally located. Gets, you know, access to a lot of people, you know, between Fort Worth and Dallas and everywhere up above and down below. So it's a great spot to be. You know, for us, we locate our offices right here next to you guys, right here in Uptown in Victory Park. And we wanted to really be the Dallas team. I mean, the city is in our name, so why not be in Dallas proper? And I think it's enticing to go take, you know, the incentives that the other cities around the area give you and whatnot, but we're still fighting to locate the team right here in downtown Dallas.
I appreciate you for that.
Yeah, thanks.
How much has Dallas changed to you since you last lived here, which I guess is probably quite a while
now? Oh, man, you know, I would always just take, you know, as a child growing up here in Texas, I mean, we would take, you know, I was kind of out from the sticks, but you know, you probably know that out in East Texas, there's not a whole lot but pine trees and fishing. But, you know, taking trips over to Dallas, some parts have changed drastically. And I think some parts have been, you know, pretty much the same for the last 3 decades. So, you know, like the gallery, you know, it's all still the same.
The landmarks are still there.
Yeah, the landmarks are still there, man. I mean, you know, you don't have Texas Stadium anymore. And that's kind of sad. And, you know, a couple things are missing. But, you know, the reunion arena over there, Reunion Center, and you know, there's some things that are gone, but
there's actually things in Frisco.
Yeah.
Frisco's a city now.
By the time you lived here, there might have been a house.
Yeah,
maybe the Rough Riders.
You know, me and Ken, my partner, we're talking about Salina now and stuff. You know, it's like Salina's like, you know, that's the next hot spot, and it's like, what, you know, how did we get up there? So you know, it's there's some places around that have definitely boomed, and I love the fact that more people are embracing Texas and people that move here are staying here because they love it so much. And that, I think that's just a testament to the best damn city in the world. So
there you go.
Can you picture a Dallas Fuel playing in Jerry's World with 100,000 fans sitting up in there?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
man. You know, I would absolutely love that. I think we got a little work to do before we get there, but definitely, you know, I see this growing every day. I've been doing it for 12 years and, you know, I started in the local land centers and you're like, you know, comic book store and playing tournaments in like hotel ballrooms. And then from the hotel ballrooms, we got into the convention centers, and from the convention centers, we made it into the arenas. And, you know, who knows what the possibilities are. I'm always just a big dreamer and always want to keep it going and make it bigger. So one day we'll get there.
So I want to bring it to now talking about the Dallas Fuel in stage 1 of Overwatch League. You guys ended 3-7. Which, I mean, definitely wasn't any of our expectations going in. Dallas Fuel, I think, across the board was kind of one of the favorites going in for a lot of people.
Yep.
Where did you see it kind of go off track from the predictions?
You know, it's tough. It's tough to identify, and it's still tough. You know, even now we're heading into stage 2. But the reality is, you know, it's a 40-game season. Mm. You know, this is the first stage of 4 in the regular season. And we brought in 3 new players. And I think that changed the dynamic of the team. Coming into the league, everybody had us tabbed anywhere between 1 through 3, you know, or 1 through 4, in terms of strength. We were definitely one of the favorites to win the league, and I still think that, you know, we should still be there. And it's just when you add three players to the roster and you change the whole dynamic of the way the team works in terms of, you know, you're in a formalized league now, you're, you know, all the players had to move to Los Angeles and literally move their lives there. That's mm-hmm. where they live now. And that whole transition, I think, threw the whole team off a little bit. And we're still just trying to find our footing. And I think that's normal, you know, in any sport. There's certainly a little bit of a fall from grace, you know, but at the end of the day, the players on our team are so skilled. I mean, it's for me, it's just a matter of when, not if. And I think we're getting there. We're making some progress. The last week of the stage, we went 2-0. And, you know, in between the stage, we're making some roster moves and some changes and doing some things to make the team even better. So I think we're getting there.
Were you kind of surprised at the number of moves that have been made between all the organizations, not just you guys, so quickly into stage one?
No, I actually thought there might be a little bit more. I think there are some teams that are still like kind of resting on their heels and not making any moves when they should be. But I think the amount of changes that we've seen so far, just the tip of the iceberg. You know, yeah. I think after stage two, yeah. you'll see a lot more. We actually just opened up the transfer window after stage one. So we've had, you know, 10 days to make it happen, which we've made. We've been active. But that window stays open until the beginning of stage four. So plenty more time to see some more changes.
Yeah, you figure with a game with like an ever-changing meta since it's been out, right? Like you would see more movement. So is that why you guys made the move? Was it more so meta, or was it, you know, maybe needing some extra
chemistry
beef?
Or,
you know, I think the two big changes we've made, one was AKM, right? The first one. So we brought AKM in, Frenchman, extremely talented DPS player, and we didn't necessarily need, you know, another top level DPS, but, I think a lot of it was just to make sure that every player on our team recognized that they have to work really hard to earn their spot in the starting lineup. And so we said, okay, AKM's definitely a talent we want on our team. He works really, really hard, very dedicated, very professional, like a hard-nosed player, you know, somebody that's always going to show up on time to work and get things done.
Right.
And I think a little bit of that was to keep everybody honest on the roster. And then I can announce this now because about 30 minutes ago, this just got approved. Which we'll announce, you know, in social media in the morning.
Is this the third roster move?
It's our second one.
Second one, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is official
this
now.
This is the second one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But we did transfer Rascal from London Spitfire.
Okay, so that's official then.
Yeah.
You did get Rascal.
Yeah, that just got approved. So
wow.
So, you know, again, don't necessarily need that DPS. We thought Seagull played great on Genji, played great on Pharah when he got the opportunity to play those heroes, and Junkrat was obviously top tier, so...
Can I ask a million-dollar question?
Sure.
Did he have to apologize to XQC?
Oh, no. he didn't
have to do that. No. That one was just water under the bridge?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they're getting along, so it's funny. It's a bit of a irony, but yeah, I think they're doing pretty well together so far. Rascal's already been practicing with us for a couple days. So
nice.
In addition, we'll probably add that 12th player to finalize the roster, and mainly that's just because we still have probably a little bit of a weakness at the tank role, but not necessarily because our players are unskilled. It's just because I think the specialization that our tank players have had in the past don't kind of mix up with some of the meta changes. So in the first stage, it was very dive heavy, Winston, D.Va, Tracer, Genji kind of, and that's what you saw. And then the Mercy whole Mercy bit, our supports didn't really. Nah. Specialize in Mercy, you know,
yeah.
So
yeah, it's a bit,
it was literally like the worst possible meta for us. And now we're kind of changing, into a meta that's, you know, the game's going to be played a little bit slower of a pace. And I think we're going to be in good shape once you see that happen.
Kind of working off Tim's question there, your team is kind of full of stars in their own right, right? Before they even came onto this team, you have a lot of different personalities on your team. You had people that were famous streamers. I mean, they were just kind of a well-known team coming in.
Yep.
How much of that factored into like trying to build chemistry with on that team? Do you think that made it more difficult with all these high level personalities, or was it easier?
Yeah, I mean, it's not nobody's fault, but anytime you have players with big personalities, you know, it's going to be difficult. There's going to be a learning curve to making a team dynamic work with everybody who's so followed and have such high expectations. And yeah, I think that completely added to some of the challenge that we had, and it still is. And you know, the one thing that's great though is that the fans, even though we came out with a little bit of a losing record, it's still awesome to watch, you know, how it's going to play out over the next 40 games, whether we end up making the playoffs or not. I think it's going to be a hell of a ride for the fans to watch. So that's one thing we wanted to guarantee, that the fans in Dallas would have a team that they could really get behind and cheer for, no matter whether they're winning or losing.
Well, I think back to your very first watching party, which was just maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. Right? Yep. That's where we first met. At the time, Dallas was a winless team. But you would never know that from the attitude or the atmosphere within the bar. Like, you would think that they were undefeated at the time. It was the right. It's like you said, right now, the energy for any team in Overwatch League is just insane.
Yeah.
Everyone has, it's that feel, that honeymoon stage still.
At that point, they hadn't won a game yet.
Yeah. It was a come out party. I mean, we were 0-4, but we had the whole block on Southside filled, you know, with Fuel fans. It was crazy. And, you know, the first bar that we, you know, had as, you know, for the official watch party, we RSVPs, we capped it at like 500 and it filled up, and it was like max capacity.
Next overflow.
Yeah, then the next bar had overflow, and then the next bar was like the grilled cheese shop, you know, down the street, had people in there watching the game. And I went in there and actually talked to some of the fans and had a grilled cheese and a beer. And, you know, and that's just kind of the way it went. And so, you know, the next watch party, official one we have, is on Friday, this coming Friday.
Where's that at?
Main event.
It's main event. Plano. Yep, main event in Plano.
You need to RSVP to that again. So if you're a P1 and you're wanting to check this out, it's all ages this time.
Yep.
So you can bring the kiddos, or if not, it's at main event. So what's the big deal?
Yep. And we already have about 500 RSVPs for that. So definitely RSVP as fast as possible. I think it'll fill up pretty quickly by the end of the week.
So you brought up personalities and everything there, and that leads me to my next question, where I do want to ask about XQC in a serious manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was suspended after week 3 for 4 weeks. So pretty much, or no, I'm sorry, 4 matches is what his original suspension was for. And then Dallas Fuel said, we're going to extend that to the rest of stage 1. Why did you guys feel the need to kind of double down on that?
I think Felix is one of those players that, he obviously has a personality, you know, and he's got really big personality and tons of people watching him. And I think he really just needed the extra time to, you know, work on transitioning into being a professional player in the Overwatch League versus being the big personality he is on stream. And, it wasn't so much to do with, you know, why the league suspended him. It was in addition, you know, he just had some trouble transitioning, being a good teammate, you know, being on time to practice, showing up to things that he needed to show up to. And, you know, that I think is important for the fans to realize that we didn't just give him tack on an extra suspension because we thought what he said was god awful and he deserved more games suspended.
Right. Come to Jesus talk.
No, it was more just like, hey man, you know, take some time off and work on some of these other things and show us that you can do these things.
Like a maturity level. These guys are so young.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're kids still when you kind of look back at it. These guys are.
Yeah. And you get thrown in, I mean, Felix is streaming in front of millions of people, you know, and that's, it's important for him to grow into being a professional player. And we wanted to give him a little bit more time to do that. And yeah, we threw it at him in the form of a suspension, and you know, that's just the way it is when, you know, you have to, you know, be responsible and be an adult.
Do you feel like he's gained something from the extra time off?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you watch his streams now, he's a little less explosive and
more tame.
Just realizing a little bit more how many people are watching him, what it means, and he's starting to realize a little bit more what it means to be a good teammate, and plenty of work to do. And I think that goes for any player in the Overwatch League period. All these guys are being thrown into a fire, so to say, and something they've never really experienced, and they got to continue to grow and learn from all their experiences that they're having in something that's so new and fresh.
Do you foresee him being a big part of stage 2 for the team?
I hope so. I mean, I think we're really wanting him to play a role in the way we strategize, and it would be great to see him more. I think you will obviously see him more because he basically spent the whole first stage suspended. So you'll see him more so long as everything goes well. But you know, I think we really have to rely on what we know is going to be consistent for us right now. So maybe he might not be coming out of the gates.
Right.
This is TCR on the ticket. We have the owner of the Dallas Fuel and Team Envious, Hastro, in with us. It's a weird thing that, do I call you Mike or Hastro?
Call me Mike.
Mike, okay. Yeah. Hastro's weird, like when you finally meet someone in person to call them by like,
When you grow up and you're an adult, you know, even though I was a pro gamer, like, it's like, oh, man.
Kind of all in our 30s. It's just weird. Okay, so Mike, I did want to step away from Overwatch here real quickly before we go to break here. I want to know in your thoughts about Optic Gaming, because I look, they just beat Team Envious in Halo Orlando, right? You guys ended up taking third there. And really, since the get-go, Team Envious and Optic Gaming have had this rivalry, right? Whether it be in Call of Duty or Halo, Gears of War, really everywhere you guys meet, you're really just 1 and 2 right there. I mean, in your opinion, what is that rivalry like? Do you see it as a rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think in the console, it mainly is just in the console world, you know? Mm. I mean, we were quicker to expand into PC games and had a lot of success there before they ever even had teams. And, you know, that I think is completely separate. I don't think people really recognize a rivalry as much in the PC side. It's a
completely
side.
Different scene.
Yeah. But, you know, in the console scene, I mean, I think it's always like a pretty fierce rivalry. And yeah, it's amazing how much success that both of our teams have had. And it's been fun to be challenged by them. And, you know, have their fans kind of rooting against us, and it's fun, and it's also kind of aggravating sometimes when, you know, they have a lot of foul-mouthed young fans. And
we went to the COD event here in Dallas. Yeah. We know.
I call them the Green Goblins.
Goblins. I like it.
Yeah, because they always just come out trying to club you, and you just have to like kick them to the curb. But you know. It's
definitely made COD fun the last few years, though, with you guys. With you guys and them.
Oh, yeah. And it's great because, you know, they were like winning a lot of the regular season tournaments, and then we would just go in and win at the World Championship or make the Grand Finals, and they could never get there. And then last year, we ended up playing each other in the Grand Final, and they finally got one on us. But we still have the highest average placing at the Call of Duty World Championship.
Y'all took them in the mat rounds before they went into the lower bracket.
And came back up with us. Yeah. So you know, we've had good success there in Call of Duty. They've been an amazing brand. I mean, I can't knock them. You know, they've been great.
Leave that to us.
No. I
mean,
they're good dudes, and yeah, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I think some of the rivalries like dying out a little bit, but I think the Outlaws and Fuel rivalry is going to be nice and
Overwatch lead. You led me into my next question. Then was that intentional? Did you guys talk ahead of times to have Optic take Houston?
I'll just be honest. I mean, I think I said in the press conference, actually at our official press conference at Overwatch League for Media Day. I think they just shotgunned it, you know, because they didn't want us to have an Overwatch League team and then not. I think when they found out, when we had a discussion, a phone call, and they, you know, I told them like, yeah, when we found out they were coming to Dallas, I kind of let them know like, hey, you know, just so you guys know, we're also going to Dallas, and we're we have the Overwatch League team there. And they were just like, what? And, you know, and I think they went out and made sure they
conveniently
did,
later. Like,
here's 20 million. Let me go ahead and just take Houston.
Yeah, they went out and quickly, you know, got an investment deal done and bought the team in Houston, which is great.
It's been good for the fans.
It's great for Texas. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't want, if we're going to have a rivalry in Texas, I want it to be them, you know?
Oh, it has to be Houston.
Yeah. I want it to be them, right? I want it to be Optic, too. I want it to be their organization.
Right.
So, about your Call of Duty team, they had a rough start to World War II. Right, they got eighth place in Dallas. They were out of the top eight in New Orleans. Right now, though, I think you guys are six and one in the Pro League for Call of Duty.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that turnaround. I mean, is there really a difference between, because you're a former pro in Call of Duty? Is there a difference between the standalone tournament and then say league play?
Always a big difference. You know, esports in many ways, a lot of the games are day to day, man. It's just like one day you can come in super hot and then the next day you come in flat. I think that goes for a lot of other sports too. I think some of the traditional sports you can actually be a little bit more consistent in, but if you actually look at the NBA, I mean, sometimes, you know, the Warriors might be, you know, 30-4, but on the next day, the bottom team in the league will come in and just give them an ass kicking, you know, and that's just the way it is. And, I think our team is just in general just getting better. They're just getting better. They're improving and working harder. And
you know, almost a completely new roster going in.
Three out of the four players. Right, but Hook, you know, came from Halo. So
right.
You know, he started with Call of Duty and couldn't play in the World Championships because he wasn't 18. So he went to Halo, did phenomenal there, won a ton of tournaments, won a lot of money, and then you know we brought him back to our Call of Duty team. So it just took a little time to get that team to gel. And the previous roster had been together for almost 2 years, you know, back to back grand finals in the World Championship, won one of them. It was just time for a change, and it wasn't, you know, really our decision to do that. We just wanted them to stay together. But when the players just clash so much, when you only have four players on a team and
yeah.
a couple of them don't get along, and you can't really, there's not a whole lot of room to replace them with substitution. It just kind of falls apart, and you got to make a move because the players just can't get along. And
right.
that's kind of what happened there. So they're looking good. I think, you know, at 6-1 coming out of the World League, they almost went 7-0. Those games were really close. Every single one of those games
against Luminosity were
so close.
I mean, the only reason you guys are in second is because of the tiebreaker.
Yeah, exactly. So I have high hopes for them. I think, you know, as long as we're peaking around that World Championship again, that's what matters. So
there you go.
Good deal. Well, I'm sure we will see you guys there. Again, this was Mike Rufail, also known as Hastro. You can follow him on Twitter at Hastro, and that O is a zero. You can also follow Dallas Fuel at Dallas Fuel and Team Envious at Team Envious. Go figure. Again, I want to remind you all to go RSVP to the Dallas Fuel Watching Party. That is this Friday at Main Event. It starts at 6 a.m. Dallas plays the 8 o'clock game. But if it's anything like that last watching party, do not get there at 6.
Yeah, 6 p.m., not yes. a.m.
Oh, did I say a.m.?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
P.m.
Yeah, no one's going to be there at 6 a.m.
You might want to get there at 6 a.m. because it was packed it was the packed. Last time.
Yeah. But yeah. We have a bigger venue now. There should be plenty of space. We have, I think there are three projectors. Every fifth television screen on the bowling alley will be showing it, and all the TV screens around the bar will be showing it. So
very nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, sir, I do want to thank you again for joining us here. It was a huge pleasure. We'll have to do it again sometime, like you said, maybe when we get a little bit more news on the local venue scene in Overwatch, or maybe come World League.
You just want to come on and chat.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll come in here anytime you guys want. Seriously, like 100 yards away. So.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're right.
If you guys just want to, you know, if you have a cool subject, why don't you guys just let me know? I'll come talk esports with you guys.
I love it.
Anytime the door is open, Mike. Thank you again. It is 7:35 here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring talking some esports. When we come back, let's talk about some Overwatch League Stage 1. That's difficult to say. This is Radio on The Ticket. Welcome back here on The Ticket. This is The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR. Follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. And if you have any questions on esports or anything like that, let us know. We're going to answer them in our final segment of the show coming up around 8:50 or so. We're going to have a quick segment here. Thank you again to Mike, owner of the Dallas Fuel and Team Envious, for joining us in studio. That was very nice of him. I felt like it was a good discussion. We learned a lot, you know, stuff like that. Let's go, though, into this quickie right here. As we talk about Overwatch League 1, I want to talk about some of the surprises that we had. This was, for those who don't know, the big deal about Overwatch League is that this was pretty much 2 years in the making, and for the longest time, people were left in the dark on what was even happening. So the fact that, you know, 1 month of Stage 1 has gone by pretty much flawless as far as a production standpoint is like my first surprise of the season.
Yeah, because we thought, like, when the league began, it had so many viewers, and we're like, this has got to peter off a little bit, right? Like, they can't keep up this type of progress, this type of momentum. But they did, consistently, throughout the entire league, which is exciting to see, and it's really something that even the casual fan can kind of grasp to, because they're trying to be like traditional sports. Like, you have a city, you're tied to a team, you know, they're trying to build rivalries and what have you. I mean, it's exciting. Like, I want other esports to follow what they're trying to do, like more structure.
I think it's a good formula.
Yeah,
I mean,
it allows you to build like a true fan base in that sense, right? So, like, kind of like he mentioned, they started off 0-4. and yet you go to an event where they're doing like a watch party and it's still packed of people rooting for you and cheering on your team.
Yeah.
And kind of like you mentioned, you're going to root for them just because they're your home team, right? You don't see that in other esports. Toxicity can kick in really quick. So I love the way that they have structured this with a fan base getting their own team.
Yeah, and we were there, and you could tell, like, it wasn't fake. Like, we got a fake excitement here.
No,
like,
not at
just
all.
The atmosphere was electric. Like, people were legitimately just excited to see their team win. I mean, it was something that I'm going to remember, you know, for a very long time.
And it's the first time, I think, in esports where I really felt that. Like, even, like, I was at the Columbus Major a couple of years ago for Counter-Strike. And yeah, it was in NA, and when Liquid was playing, you really felt like the stadium getting around them. But it wasn't even because they were Liquid fans, right? They were just, it was an American team on American soil, so that's why everyone was cheering. Any other game, you were just kind of cheering for a good play or anything like that, right? It's in CSGO, I feel like most of the time you're just cheering against the teams you don't like.
Right.
Where here, it's no, you really are cheering for one team, and it's
treated like traditional sport.
In esports, it's a weird vibe. It's a good vibe, but it's weird. So you do have that. Some other big surprises for me, just getting more into the actual gameplay. I was not expecting New York to be as dominant as they were. You know, this is pre-Flower with New York, right? They're not even getting Flower until stage 3 when he turns 18.
Which is weird.
No, and I remember in our preview show for Overwatch League, like I said, I think New York will be a good team once they get Flower, but I was not expecting Pine.
Right. And it all comes down to, and if you look at statistics, that's a hard word. It's all about, like, they do everything well. I mean, they're DPS, they're getting frags. They're keeping their support upright, which is a big deal. I think they were the best team in the league at that. So, I mean, that translates to what they're doing. It also doesn't hurt that you have pretty much like a third DPS in your support player in that Zenyatta play with Zhonak. But I mean, yeah, I'm with you, Tim. Like, I had them, you know, like a 2B, you know, with them and Dallas Fuel preseason. And, you know, yeah, I mean, they look like the best team in the league right now. It's theirs to lose.
And they're the hardest division also. The Atlantic division is, you know, the tougher of the two, and coming out 9-1 with a +21 differential. You know, you're doing something right. And considering how ugly their logo is, they're like really
it always goes back to
through.
The logo.
They're making up in skill on where their logo and name lack. You bring up the division. That's one of the saving grace for the Dallas Fuel right now. Yes, you started off pretty poor. That's obvious. I don't think that's breaking any news here, but you are on the easier side of it, right? So hopefully you can turn it around. They were my pick to win the league, so I'm pretty shocked the way they did. Now, of course, I understand XQC needed to be suspended, obviously, after talking to Mike about it, but he is like a top-tier Winston, right? Yeah. So anytime you lose that, it's going to impact your team.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of your best tank players in a dive-heavy meta. So not having him hurt. I mean, you saw it with Coco being played out there, you know, with heroes that he's really not comfortable with. It shows. Like, constantly dying quickly on Winston. And even going away from dive comp, you know, he just looks so uncomfortable on Orisa. Like, they needed XQC to be good. And it's good that he's, you know, seeing the error of his ways. You know, maybe he turns it around because his team needs him. And I think they could be a top-level team with him and these other additions. So I don't think their season's over.
I'm just excited to see him come back because I would like to see him in his right, you know, mental state, pure form, because you've heard so much about him. People heard a lot about him prior to the league, obviously. But to see him come back and perform at a high level on a team that it's like in my mind, it's building up the perfect comeback story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your team is struggling. You put him in that position partially. You're to blame for it. So to now to come back, and if things turn around, he's going to get a lot of credit regardless if it's him or not. So the stage is really set for him to make a good little comeback here.
But I've been hurt before, Anuj, because I said this the first time when he got suspended and, you know, did wrong, and then he comes out and did it again. But legitimately in this last apology, like, you could tell it affects him because he wants... he loves this league, he loves this game, and he wants to be the best player, and he can't be the best player if he's not playing. So I think third time's a charm, you know, for this guy. I'm really rooting for him. The team needs him. I need him.
And go ahead.
Well, make your point real quick, and then we're going to go.
I was going to say, you see this in traditional sports of players that need to mature, and our hometown guy, Ezekiel Elliott, is kind of the perfect example of that, right? Sometimes they need a little bit of extra time to mature. Getting away from the game can do that for you, and I hope we see it in him.
Look at you, bringing it back to the local sports. What a radio professional you are, man. It is 7:51 here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring talking esports. I want to thank Don Davis Auto Group and Rodney Anderson Supreme Lending for giving us the time to do this. When we come back, let's talk some CSGO here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring here on The Ticket. We are an esports show, for those wondering. Esports in the simplest ways, because we really didn't get a chance to explain it with Mike starting off the show, which, by the way, thank you, Core Hydration, for sponsoring that. Esports at its roots is competitive gaming, right? So think of like any other sport out there. You have your different levels of play. You have minor leagues. You have semi-pros. No different when it comes to competitive gaming. Does it sound goofy? Yes, it does. I'm not trying to sit here and argue with you that it doesn't sound weird, but it is a thing. I promise you it is out there and people are making a lot of money doing it.
It's just a $1 billion industry.
It's $1 billion.
I mean, it's not like, you know, Patriots ownership, you know, Heat ownership, you know,
Jerry
Rangers.
Jones.
Yeah, Jerry
Cowboys
Jones.
Own a team.
But hey, it's not a thing, guys.
It is out there. And I encourage you, if you have any questions, you know, hit us up on Twitter. We're at the Center Ring on there. We're happy to be your guides into esports. It's something we love. We love answering questions, helping people get into it. And the beauty with it, right, is it's kind of like sports, where you might love sports, but you hate soccer. And you might love football, but it's all sports at the end. It's the same thing with esports, right? Overwatch might not be your bag, and that's okay. You might love CSGO. And speaking of CSGO, we just had one of the majors, which is, there's two a year, so a major is a big tournament. If not
think of it like a golf major or a tennis major, same thing.
It is a big deal to win, and Cloud9 was the first North American team to ever win one. And it's huge because it also kind of signifies what little offseason there is in Counter-Strike world. It does signify that, and we had a lot of roster moves going on right now.
Yeah, and I mean, a couple of the ones that stand out, the biggest one I think for most of us was just the reformat of Optic Gaming. Optic Gaming had various variations of their lineups, and these guys have now brought in what we would think are a hodgepodge group of guys that didn't really make sense to most of us, but they revamped their whole lineup. They got a whole new starting five, and three of them are basically coming from the same team. You got three of them coming from North, one of them from the Academy team, but Config and Cajun B, who were considered the star players from North, got benched, moved over to Optic, and everyone kind of wondered, what are they going to build around him, right? Like, who are the other three? Are they going to keep this as a Danish team, or what are we going to see here? And to all of our surprise, they brought in three North American players, but you got Shazam and Stanislaw, who have been added to the team. A little unique for us. I think that it was just a weird...
It's
like addition.
It's definitely nothing we would have predicted, right? Like,
no. Well, considering that a year ago, so just to show you how quickly things happen, a year ago, Stanislaw and Shazam were both on Optic Gaming, no longer part of it, and now have come back. And Shazam was kicked off because of a personality clash, you know, with Stanislaw. They had a lot of issues, a lot of internal rift on the team. They couldn't play together, and kind of like Mike mentioned, sometimes it just doesn't work out. You have to just make a change because personalities don't match and the team is so small, five players. If it's not working out, you got to do something. You got to change it up.
The teams can typically consist of five players. Four to six players on any esports team, right? Depending on the game. And you are spending a lot of time. I'm talking 40 plus hours of just practicing. That's not even including just hanging out. Half the time you're living in the same house with these guys. So if you don't like each other, there's a lot of time to rub each other the wrong way. And with to give an idea on how bad it got with Shazam and Stanislaw, when they would run scrims and practices, they would put Shazam in a separate voice chat and not communicate with him during the game.
During practice. Like, during practice, they would be setting up plays, and Shazam was wondering what's happening here because he's hearing no comms on the headset.
Think about if the Cowboys were at practice and didn't let Dez into the huddle.
That's basically what it is. I mean, that's a really good comparison because that's basically what happened with them. They booted Shazam off the roster. Slowly, that roster became garbage. Stanislaw got booted as well, or left on his own, actually, but left the team. And now they're both back. And so it's going to be really interesting to see the team chemistry there. Definitely one team to keep an eye on.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the roster. I mean, Shazam even had some, you know, ins and outs with Misfits. Like, there was some conflict there, and then more to your point, Stanislaw had his conflicts, but you also have personalities like Config, right?
We saw
him at ESL Dallas. He's known as the heel, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's known as the bad guy. So it's interesting to see how that dynamic's going to work, and if they're going to be able to, like, keep this thing competitive.
To me, this is a 6-month trial until they find a permanent team.
Yeah.
I cannot see this team going for more than a year on the high end, which, as of right now, the longest tenured team in Counter-Strike is G2 at 1 year. So if they stayed together for a full year, I would be fairly shocked.
I felt like it was a rush job anyways, right? You were approaching some roster locks because season play was starting with ESL and ECS, which are multiple leagues. So again, for those who don't know, in Counter-Strike, or in mainly in a lot of different esport games, there's not one league. There's no NFL. There's no higher body governing a lot
of
this.
It's more like soccer in that sense, right? With multiple leagues that your team.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, that's not a bad one there. Really, Overwatch League, League of Legends, those are a few that are truly more like your traditional sports, where you have that one superior league and everyone else kind of answers to them. But in the world of Counter-Strike, being together for more than, I would say, the average roster probably lasts about 6 months before you start looking at roster moves.
And in that 6 months, they roughly have 100 matches, right? So
mm-hmm.
It's like they have a lot of time to know if it's working out or not. And one of the biggest changes that happened was VP, who we've talked about last time we were on the show. I believe they had their own segment that we had talked about them so much as the longest standing tenure team at that point. It had been a couple of years that these guys had been together. They finally made their change, and they dropped one of their longest tenured players, Taz, brought on Michu in his place. And unfortunately, at the most current, I guess, Star Ladder series is the current event that's going on right now. They've already bombed out of it, and people are calling for heads again. But like I said, they were the longest standing team, and now your next longest tenured team went from 3 years, you know, down to one. So changes come rapid fire, I feel like, in CSGO. One of the other biggest changes was actually Mike's team. You know, Mike's team is Team Envious in Counter-Strike, so they don't go by the Dallas branding there. They're Team Envious. They made a change where they dropped XMS and Sixer and picked up Haji and Keo, again, bringing in another former player to join the squad. I think that'll be also interesting. They start their first league play actually starting next week. They haven't got to show that new lineup yet.
It is 8:07 here on the ticket. We are the center ring talking some CSGO roster moves. I've said this before. I am blown away by Kiyoshima. I give this man no credit. And I feel like I'm at fault for that. I don't know if it's like a stigma because of it's just maybe it's his face. I really
hate his face.
I really don't know why I dislike Kiyoshima, but the man has two majors underneath his belt, and I give him no credit for any of it. And it's like I said, it's at my fault. The guy is a solid player. I think I've said it before, though, where he is the embodiment of a fifth roster spot.
He takes on the tougher role, so I appreciate Keo for what he does, just because he's going to take whatever's left over, right? So when he was playing for FaZe, for example, he had four stars around him. He wasn't going to dictate how a match went. So he takes what's given to him. He gets a lot of blame put on him, hence his nickname, The Problem. hopefully for Envious, he's the solution. So they're bringing him back, and you know they'll see what they can do with this new lineup. And I think the last and biggest, you know, announcement I think that's happening now is the number one team in the world, SK Gaming, is looking to potentially leave their organization to come to a North American organization, Immortals, which, you know, if you go and look at their history, you'll have to look that up, but something similar to this has happened with them before. And these guys are potentially coming to move to an NA organization under the Immortals title. And that would be the biggest move I could see happening, and it looks like that's about to happen. And SK would pick up the younger brother version of them, I guess you could say, at best, which is the 100 Thieves lineup.
The people that no team wants to touch.
Well, which it's is like, a former Immortals roster. I mean, it's the Brazilian scene in Counter-Strike is funny because you'll go full circle, right?
It's a 15-man rotation,
yes,
basically,
If you are a professional Brazilian Counter-Strike player, which has some of the best teams in the world, there is no doubt that you are going to be on the main three Brazilian rosters.
Yeah.
It is funny to me, and what's funny with this one is, like, with them leaving SK, so when the roster of current SK left Luminosity back roughly 2 years ago now, yep, after the major in Columbus, it was a scandal, right? They signed underneath the table. They never even told Luminosity about it.
They signed a deal with SK while negotiating their contract with Luminosity.
It was a scandal as far as CSGO goes. It was a pretty big one. And this one, though, has nothing to do with that. It all has to do with visas.
Yep.
Right? Immortals is a stateside organization.
An LA-based company.
Yeah. They're in LA, so it's easier for the players to get permanent visas here, which is notoriously one of the harder spots to get visas.
It took me 25 esports. Years to get mine. You know, I know how difficult it is. I'm coming from real-world experience here. So, yeah, I mean, for them to make that move for that reason at least makes sense. There's some logic behind it. I understand for a long-term play, for business opportunities, whatever it may be, this gives them a better chance long-term. And for 100 Thieves, it's a saving grace because you're going to go into a top-tier organization. They replaced their problem child on that team, which was KNG, with picked up Phelps, who was just part of the SK lineup. And so we can see something build there, hopefully.
So they add another guy that had no chemistry and was toxic with other teams. So it's, I don't know. I'm reserved about that. No. Yeah. That was, you're ticking, that was FNX.
FNX.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's still on the roster. So another problem child.
Yeah,
but yeah, they brought in, you know, Phelps, which I think will be a good move because Phelps is still a top tier player. But yeah, that's something to keep an eye out for because that looks like it's going to happen here pretty soon.
And we will keep an eye on it. And if you ever are curious on any of these follow-ups, again, follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. We do have, at the start, I said this was episode 93. For this, it is the third episode that we have done here on The Ticket. We do a weekly podcast as well. So, again, if this is something that interests you out, I feel like we do a pretty good job of, you know, sometimes we might get a little carried away in lingo and everything. If you have questions, anything coming up on esports or anything like that, hit us up on Twitter at The Center Ring. We'll be more than happy to answer those. It is 8:12 here on The Ticket. This is The Center Ring. When we come back, let's talk about what makes an esport. Welcome back to The Center Ring. I am Tim Kay. Like the man said, alongside me is Brett Foster. Say hello, Brett.
Hi.
Let the masses know your voice.
This is my voice.
And we also have Anuj Bajaj.
Anuj Bajaj.
Which is exactly how you say it.
Hey, guys. How are you? Hopefully, y'all are enjoying this, man. Let us know what y'all think.
Yes, please do, at The Center Ring. All of our personal Twitters are also attached in the info. Go check it out. We are taking Twitter questions coming up here at 8:50, so we will discuss that and, you know, do radio stuff then. Up next, we have Overwatch League talk again. We will dive a little bit more into our thoughts, our MVP candidates for Stage 1, and get into Stage 2, and maybe even explain what that means. Right, we didn't get a whole lot of time to explain it too much in our previous talk, and especially with Mike on, we wanted to discuss more, you know,
the goods,
X's and O's with him. So we'll talk some more Overwatch next. Right now, though, I do want to talk about the making of an esport game. Right, every time we do the show and or take Twitter questions, people always ask, you know, what is going to be the next big esport? Is it going to be PUBG or insert any other game out there?
Insert the next to be determined game that's coming out like in a week.
And I was curious on your guys' opinion, like to you, Brett, like what makes an esport to you? Because when I think of one, I want fast. It's got to be fast. It's got to be entertaining and overall competitive.
I mean, just an overall like team aspect, you know, not something that where one person just can carry you through the thing, but also a cult following, right? Like there are some games out there that try to be an esport, but they can't because they don't have the fan base to kind of keep it going. So I think number one, just a following. Number two, the team aspect. I don't need an esport to be fast. Just viewable, right? Easy to watch, which was a big talking point when Overwatch League came out. Was, is this going to be viewable? You know, it seems hectic. Is this going to be watchable? And it is. And that's where I think we're seeing success with the league, is because it's viewable. It has a cult following, and it's very much so team-based. So
I think there needs to be a natural progression. If you are selling yourself as the next big esport prior to your game launching, I find it hard to buy in at that point. I want to see your game excel as a game first, right? Like not have, you know, for those of you that know, netcode issues right off of the bat, disconnection issues, little things, you know, things to make the game right, to find the meta of your game. I want to see a game establish itself and then take a natural progression into esports. You kind of see that with games right now. Like I think Battalion is one that we've mentioned constantly, is these guys have sold themselves as the next big esport, have set up major tournaments coming up, but the game is still in a messy state with a low player count. So I just want to see a game. One thing I agree with Brett on is it does need to be watchable, right? Mm-hmm. So some sort of ease to watch. I think that's a big problem with, you know, Players Unknown Battleground, is it's difficult from a spectator. There's 100 people on a map. They're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
There's no direction where you can watch, hey, he's going to do this next. You don't know that. It's all very random.
There's nothing more infuriating than watching an esports event, seeing the kill feed and seeing all these kills happen, and I'm still watching a guy looting in a building.
You're like,
right?
Wait a minute, what happened?
It's like,
here?
What is going on? Where's the viewing at?
I think one funny thing is with all these games that we've mentioned, right? Battalion 1944, which is a newer game. It's I love it. I think it's a lot of fun, but it's early access, and the whole game was designed to be a competitive game, right? I mean, down to the fact that it's 5-on-5, there's no single player at all.
They've taken bits out of other games to also show that we are an esport.
So, but with that, PUBG, I mean, even look at like Overwatch when it first started. Nothing in today's world, nothing is like a natural progression, right? Everything has to be forced, and team companies have to put out big money. And then you end up like a game like Battalion. It came out a couple weeks ago. It started with, you know, a base players of like 20,000, which is pretty good for a
concurrent
alpha.
Players. So like people playing at the same time.
20,000 people playing at any given moment. And now it's back down to about 2,000 people playing at any given moment, which is scary for a game that you just sold as like the next big esport. And it's because all these games now are early access. They're released broken, and everyone knows that, but your first impression, even if you sell it as an early access game, people don't care about that, right? They're like, no, I spent money on this game, it should work.
I expect a finished game, you know, is what you expect when you spend money on a game, even if it's in a beta or some sort of early access state. You want it to be playable. You know, you don't want to feel like you just bought a half of a game and now I'm going to have to wait 6 months before they update it for it to be in a playable state. So that's why I like the idea of a natural progression. Release your game. Let people feel it out. See what they like.
Look at games like Counter-Strike, right? Like that came out almost, what, 13 years ago now? Yep. And it started out as a mod in Half-Life. So there was no desire, you know, when they were building that from the Half-Life engine, there wasn't any idea behind saying, oh, we need to do this because then, you know, think of it from a spectating point of view and then all this and we got to get it out there and get pro teams right away. It started out as just a game where people played. It was competitive. It gathered that following. And I understand in today's world, you're probably never going to get a game like that ever. The original Dota, right? How that picked up steam. Mm-hmm. The original Counter-Strike, you're not going to get that anymore. You're going to see games like, I feel like, Overwatch now, right? albeit Overwatch has been out for over 2 years.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an older style of game, but yeah. Blizzard also handpicked how they were going to create the
game. They waited for a reason and didn't launch Overwatch League the day they released the game. They yeah. wanted to see how the yeah. game worked, you know, how to make it a viewable game. They let it progress into what it is today. You know, one thing I really hate is when a game comes out and there's already predefined pro teams. It's like, how is somebody a pro in a game?
You didn't even give me a chance.
When yeah, no one hasn't even touched it yet.
Yeah. I mean, gone are the days of any esports game growing organically. It's never going to happen again.
But if you look at the ones that stick around, mm-hmm. that's how they all got there. You look at your single, like your Street Fighter type games, your StarCrafts, your Counter-Strike, your Dotas. All these games grew into it, and all of them have stuck around.
Yeah, they're successful.
I can't even tell you another game that's maybe just popped into the scene, and all of a sudden, they're a big, gigantic esports
Overwatch?
Game.
I mean, that is the yeah. only example.
But part of that is Blizzard established themselves, right? So Overwatch, had it been released by BF something, who knows, right? Like, who knows what Overwatch would have been?
Yeah,
Overwatch came in with a following of, I mean, 10 million, 15 right. million yeah, I mean, fan base because of Blizzard.
But they kept the game interesting. The meta is constantly changing, but the game has, although we get frustrated sometimes when we play it, right? But it's always been fun. And I think that's a big thing, is you got to keep your game fresh. You got to keep it fun. And, you know.
Because there's other arena happen. Shooters out there. Lawbreakers died in a couple of weeks.
In,
you know,
yeah,
the new months. Quake. Same thing. Quake had a branding behind it and came in and just tried to be an esports game. That's all they wanted to do. Nobody migrated to it.
I think that may be the problem because people have been burned. Like, why don't you just focus on the game first? I mean, Overwatch did that. They let it be a game first, figured out that, you know, people were interested, and then brought it in. But don't come at me with, this is the next greatest esport. Like, no.
The skill curve has to be a natural progression, right? Start the game, and you're going to have those outliers that are really good, but then let other people actually become better at it. You look at a game like Quake or Battalion 1944 or Lawbreakers, which is they're all of them are super fast, but if you're like maybe new to shooters, right? Or even like a PC game in general, like how many of our friends have picked up Overwatch and it is their first time playing a PC game or a shooter, right? And they still find it fun, though, because there's elements to other games that they can pull from. Mm-hmm. Games like Quake, I see it in Battalion 1944, you're not going to get the casual gamer there. You're not going to get a casual fan who's just like, you know, I just think I want to kill some time.
There's
on
no casual
Quake.
Mode to it. There's no, like, it's like you get in and you're straight into a competitive setting, right? And people on
it's intimidating.
PC or console... pretty toxic in general, right? We're not a welcoming community for the most part. So if you are new and you're bad at some of these games that are being sold as competitive games, probably not going to have a good time. I think that's why a game like Fortnite's so fascinating. It's such a casual game and comes across as, you know, you can just get in with your friends and enjoy it, but at the end of the day, there's a really competitive and
there's a
huge skill gap.
There's a high skill ceiling.
Very
in that
high
game.
Skill ceiling. So those are what intrigue me in games.
But you can play it casual.
You can.
And Epic Games, the people behind it, although they do have... I mean, people know what Epic Games are, right? Unreal, Gears of War. They have games behind that name, but they're not shoving Fortnite esports down your throat, right?
Don't even really hear anything about
it. They're taking their time with it, if they're even at all, right? This might just be one of those things that we just randomly see with a tournament, and it's some third party running it. Which might be the best way to do it. So my answer to what is the next big esport is almost start looking for games that are just popular. Not so much skill-based, not so much, you know, you're not gonna see a game all of a sudden pop up out of nowhere and then instantly become...
an esport game.
Yeah.
Competitive esport game, yeah.
I mean, and even look at like games like Rainbow Six. They just did their world tournament just this last weekend. That game overall, I would say, is... in masses, not a very popular game, right? It has its community and it's a solid community, but not that huge. And they were pulling in like almost 200,000 viewers. On
and they're talking about longevity
scene.
Of that game too, right? Like they're not looking at making another Rainbow Six game. Yeah. They want to keep building on that game and making that game better. rather than receiving like a Call of Duty. I think one of their biggest challenges every year, new game, right? Like you have to build your base back up. So Rainbow Six is a great example of a game that just stuck it out through some tough times. And
yeah, I mean, it has,
now you're starting to see growth there.
It has some staying power, right? Like it has everything that people want, you know, the five-man competition, 5v5. You have, it's modern, which people like in a video game, right?
And branding, especially in a shooter, right? Like Rainbow Six has such a, it's like a Activision Blizzard kind of backing with them with that name.
Yeah.
So that helps with them too. But yeah, just to seeing the growth and the continuation of supporting the game from the development side is also what's going to help a game stay and sustain itself.
Right.
Good stuff. Let us know what you think the next big esport is, or what is it that you look into in esport, right? Mate, you know what? There doesn't have to be another big esports, right? Maybe the ecosystem can only support the top five right now or something like that. Maybe that's it. Let us know on Twitter what you think at The Center Ring. Speaking of, this is The Center Ring on The Ticket. It is 8:31. When we return, we will talk some Overwatch League Stage 2. 8:35 here on The Ticket. We are The Center Ring. I'm Tim Kay alongside Anuj and Brett. Welcome to the Esports F Around show of The Ticket. We've done this a handful of times now. So if you are a returning listener, hello, thank you. And if you are new, all the same, I love you. We are hearing some lovely comments on Twitter, by the way. Appreciate you. If you have questions, again, hit us up on Twitter at The Center Ring. I know esports seems like a big, scary world of a bunch of nerds, but I promise you, it's actually quite fun when you get involved. So again, at The Center Ring, if you want to give it a follow, all the same, love you. Okay, so let's get into some Overwatch discussion here for the Overwatch League. We'll talk some, I want to touch on some Stage 1 events still. I know we had some MVP candidates we want to touch on, and we'll also discuss some Stage 2 here. But before we get into that, I do want to explain to the P1 and the listeners here exactly what we mean by that, because not everyone here follows Overwatch League. So Overwatch League just started up in January, okay? It's 2 years in the making. It's Blizzard. Blizzard is the father company of Overwatch, which is a game.
The game creators.
Yes. Look up Overwatch for to learn on that one. So the season is 40 games broken down into four stages, okay? The stage is about 5 weeks apiece, and then you go into stage two with about a bye week. Each champion of stage one, they get money. It's a show game. But none of that really matters for the actual standings, okay? So we just finished up stage one last week. Stage two starts tomorrow, okay? So we have already had the bye week, I guess really was last week. Stage one ended 2 weeks ago. So stage two begins tomorrow. Each week it runs Wednesday through Saturday. Let me get the times here because they switched up the times on us. Stage two, it's 6 to 10. Yeah. So the first game starts at 6 p.m. Central, then 8, and then the last game of the day is at 10. Okay, so tomorrow, Fuel play at 6 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
I think. Okay, yeah. They play Shanghai Dragons, which, listen, okay? If you do watch the league, you know they needed that one. They needed to start against a softy. So Shanghai is the worst by far in the league so far. They went 0-10 to start stage one. They're the only winless team so far. And it's not even like they were never really even close in any of their games.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to start off bad, you know, talking about the Fuel, if you're going to start off bad, it's probably good for your team if you end with the Dragons. Well, second to the last game and then start with the Dragons. I mean, they've been that bad. So
now both teams have made some roster moves. We've been talking about it lately with the Dallas Fuel. They added some more DPS power, which is kind of surprising considering they already had some of the stronger DPS core going into it. Now I think they have like five damage dealers, right, on the team.
Yeah, they have five players playing for essentially two or three spots. And, I mean, it's not just like they're five DPS players. They're five of the most well-known DPS players in the world. So, I mean, there's going to be some competition there, which is good. I mean, the guys that were there before, they weren't getting the job done. I mean, they weren't getting the frags that they needed to keep their support upright. And you saw that. Like, it was just a lack of getting that frag, that important frag.
When in doubt, add a Korean to the roster. That's the best way to do this.
Right. I mean, hey, China, not China.
Number one.
Yeah, Shanghai is doing it. I mean, they added two. So, I mean, they're known to be, you know, the best players in the world. So.
What I saw, though, with the Dallas Fuel in stage one, I mean, yes, they struggled to get the kills. They struggled to get the frags when needed. You know, we discussed, I mean, during the season play, right? They had no counter to a Pharah, right? Or even worse, a pharmacy combo, right? They had no answers to that most of the time. But more so, I think if you're looking at more of a high overview, it's adjustments, right? To me, Dallas Fuel really struggled at in-game, on-the-fly adjustments.
Yeah.
Whether it be with their comp or how they're playing, there were times where they would be on Eichenvall and Siegel would... They would be playing a pharmacy combo, which for those who don't know, it's going to be kind of difficult to understand, but they're in the air. They're flying around in the air.
Getting constantly healed and getting damaged.
So you need range to get that, and they would stick Siegel on Junkrat literally the entire game.
Yeah, and that was the theme of pretty much the entire stage leading up into the last couple of games of the season was adjusting to the meta. They're with teams playing a permanent Pharah on certain maps, they weren't doing it consistently on, you know, on maps where it's pretty much every map there, the team has a Tracer. Like, there's a perma Tracer. The Fuel didn't really have that. I mean, you'd see Effect on her every once in a while, and he was effective, but I mean, it was adjusting. Yeah, no, you see what I did there? But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just adjusting to the meta. And I think that going leading up to this stage, it's going to favor them, which, you know, we can talk about later.
Some of the other things in stage one that we didn't get to in our last segment, I don't know if there's so much surprises, right? But I do want to get into a little bit some MVP talk here. All right. I don't have one specific MVP candidate. There's a lot to pick from. But I don't just have one.
Yeah.
The way I kind of looked at it was, okay, what player can you remove from a team and then see that team instantly kind of decline?
Right.
Right. That to me is a big factor when looking at an MVP. I think of guys like Bedosin on London or, you know, Jonak, who was a rookie going into this. He had no professional experience whatsoever going into it. And on New York XL... just dominated.
Yeah.
And something that both of them have in common that I think have a high quality MVP candidate is they played Zenyatta at the best levels. They were literally top one and two for Zenyatta going and ending stage one.
Doing damage and not dying as Zenyatta is, I mean, it can be hard. It's one of the hardest heroes to play and hit with.
Find you a girl that can do both.
Ooh.
Okay. And they can do both.
Yeah.
They can play Zenyatta, they can heal you, but at the same time, they will out-damage your damage, which is pretty insane when you think of how effective that is.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you want to get away from maybe just healers, or you want to look at a team that was surprising and not a lot of people saw in the playoff picture, is Boston Uprising. I mean, they were a team of pretty much no-name players. Going into this, no one really knew a whole lot about him. I definitely didn't have him in my top six, but I mean, you want to look at one person. If you take him off the team to see a team pretty much just drop down to, you know, the bottom, is Dream Casper. That guy is insane. On Pharah, tore it up in stage one, gave the Fuel fits for those Dallas Fuel fans that were watching the game. I mean, they couldn't kill him. But I'm interested to see, you know, what happens, because it's kind of early, right? I mean, this is stage one. Trying to pick a MVP is hard, but the meta, it's, you know, the player pool, the player pick is going to change in stage two. Is Dream Casper going to be as good in stage two as he was in stage one, not playing Pharah as much? Maybe not.
So And for those who might not know, when we say meta, it's a common term in esports, yeah. right? So you're going to want to learn what meta means. And
just in gaming in general.
Really in general and just anything gaming culture. Meta is the trend. That's right. All it is. What is the most recent trend? Okay. In football, right? I don't know. Pick one.
So with football, you got the spread offense, right? So like traditional football 15 years ago, it was about having the I formation, slam it down somebody's throat, run it 30 times a game, control the game that way. You saw that progress into a spread offense over time.
Yeah.
And now that's kind of taken over the league, right? From college football to the NFL.
Yeah, and if
they go to the spread offense. And in the NBA, three-point shooting teams. Now three-point shots are the way to go. When it used to be put up a seven-footer down low and let us keep throwing the ball down there. So
yeah, I mean,
that's what's changing is what these guys are talking about is what's hot right now, what's working right now. And in these games, that's happening because the developers are changing little tweaks to these individual characters in the game that's allowing them to perform or act differently. So that's why you see the meta evolve so much in esports in general is because it's developers tweaking the game in little ways to cause you to react a different way in the game.
And in one of the most recent tweaks was with a character called Mercy, who she's a healer. She can resurrect people after they died and things like that. Sounds very cool, though, doesn't it? So they've tweaked her to where she was in almost a 100% pick in every game for Overwatch.
Was. Yeah.
I think officially, statistically, she was like a 98%.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Got to get that one.
Let's give some credit, okay?
Okay.
There were 2% of the time she was not picked. And they've tweaked it now to where she's not as fast with rezzing, and she's not as fast in general just speed-wise when she's using her ultimate. So it's going to throw off a lot of what was stapled in a lot of people's roster were Mercy mains.
Yeah.
For example, Dallas Fuel, though, never really had a strong Mercy. They didn't have a strong... Envious, at the time, before Dallas Fuel was around, never needed a strong Mercy because she wasn't as heavy in the meta, right?
Yeah.
You had Harry Hook, who is God tier with Lucio,
mm-hmm.
And you have guys that...
specialize in other characters.
Yeah, yeah. They valued that more. So now, with this nerf that went to Mercy, going into Stage 2, it's wide open.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a completely different league. We didn't get into the map rotations changing.
Mm-hmm.
Certain teams are going to be more adapted to that play style. You have Junkertown, which is a very wide open map, right? That was a payload that was very wide open. And people did the pirate ship strategy every time. And
it's frustrating.
And it ended up turning into just what defense screwed up first. So now with maps like King's Row, very close quarters, right? You can't really run away in King's Row. Same thing with Hanamura. Hanamura, it's an offense map. You're assaulting one, one team's attacking, one team's defending. That attacking team on both sites is just one choke point.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
I mean, they don't call it draw Nomura for a reason. It's very hard to defend on that map.
So you're going to see Stage 2, I think, really... I mean, parity is already a factor in Overwatch League, but I think for Stage 2, it's going to be off the charts.
Yeah,
in y'all's opinion, do y'all think the dive comp stays as valuable, or do you see more like the Widow Junkrat kind of combo kick into play in Stage 2?
I mean, for sure, I see the dive comp staying.
I mean,
it's effective. I mean, not a lot of people saw Houston Outlaws as a team to even worry about. I mean, and they made it to the top three where they got to play in the playoff in Stage 1 because of that dive comp. I don't see that going anywhere. It's still effective. It's just now your healers, rather than staying back in the back of the lines, you're going to need some more offensive heroes like Lucio, up there in the mix, which is going to be more fun to watch because now you have an extra player on the screen to watch rather than, someone just holding left click.
Well, I think for a lot of teams too, the dive comp, and I'll say this real quick before we go to break, is going to be more effective, right? Because before the Mercy scared dive comps because there was nothing more gut-wrenching than throwing your two tanks, okay? You got typically a dive comp, you're looking at D.Va and Winston being your front line, diving in there, killing one person, and then all of a sudden that Mercy insta-rezzing them, right? Like, and then... And then now what? You have two guys in the back line just getting destroyed, and you get nothing out of it because of the Mercy res. The Mercy would go ultimate, they'd be Valkyrie flying around, get another insta res.
Yeah.
So it was the ultimate counter to a dive comp was a hero that was never intended to be a hard counter to anything.
Yeah, and it's good to see her gone, because part of esports is, you know, when you make a mistake, it's supposed to hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more frustrating to see, you know, Mercy, Valkyrie, res, all that hard work and strategy you put in is gone. So stage two is going to be more fun to watch. I'm super hyped about it.
And with us wrapping up the stage two talk here, real quick, who do you have as your prediction for the stage two MVP, since y'all talked about your stage ones?
I mean, just popularity wise, maybe like a Lucio player. Maybe you see a support as, you know, the MVP, because now you have, you know, Lucio that can get in the mix and do the healing, but he can also, you know, get some boinks off. But you also have offensive heroes.
A boink off is when you push someone off a map, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Definitely going to have to explain
that. Did I sound like an uber nerd right there?
Not so much a nerd, but a boink off definitely sounds something different.
So real quick, who's your pick? With the real quick part being the emphasis there, who's your pick for stage two?
Maybe you see popularity come play, and maybe Harry Hook, you know, on Lucio, he goes back to his bay.
I'm going to go with XQC.
I should have jumped in before I started this question so I could go with XQC.
Well,
and now you've ruined that. So as my backup plan, we'll go with Rascal, the new addition.
There you go. It is 8:51 here on the ticket. Again, our Twitter is at The Center Ring. We talk in esports right now on the radio. And up next, we will have some e-news where we just touch on some quick hit stories for esports, and we will take your Twitter questions next. We do talk esports there. We even have a Discord, which is like a chat, if you will. And we're always in there. We're in voice chat all the time. So if you have, you know, need a group of guys to watch some...
Or girls.
There are girls there. If you needed someone to watch esports with, I'll be your cuddle buddy. I'll be your Huckleberry.
First day of Overwatch League was a blast with all you guys.
It was, yeah. We typically on Overwatch League nights, we have a pretty good group of guys in there to watch it with. So anyways, let's get into some e-news here, though. E-news is our weekly show, or our weekly segment, rather, that it is not entertainment news. It's e-news, because it's e-sports. And where we just kind of quick hits. We all know that. So some quick hits I wanted to get into was actually one thing that wrapped up last week with Orlando MLG. And the beauty of this was the first time Halo has returned to MLG since 2013, if I'm remembering correctly, when MLG decided to drop Halo from the circuit. This is pretty huge. So this is after ESL had their way with Halo, never really took off with them for whatever reason. And Splice ended up defeating Optic Gaming 4-2 in the finals. Kind of rough viewership, though.
It oh, yeah?
Peaked around 18,000.
Nah.
That's
rough for Halo. I mean...
Not for a big event. You're back at MLG. I mean, I have faith that MLG is going to be able to turn the series around, because, man... Back
Halo
in the
needs
day,
to revamp itself. They need like a fresh start.
No,
with like,
here's the irony: they don't need to revamp. They need to unvamp,
or like go back.
Just go
with
back
it,
to
remaster
to
something.
Old Halo,
yeah,
right. People don't like. I think we've learned with Call of Duty: Advanced Warfare, we don't like jetpacks.
Yeah,
we don't want futuristic. You know, I mean, the irony that I'm saying we don't want futuristic tech in a Halo game. I'm okay with what Halo had. I don't need.
The extras,
right. So that's something that Halo needs to figure out. Maybe just ditching Halo 5 altogether and just saying, we're going to go back to a remake of Halo 2.
Yeah.
And we're going to stick with it, because that's when Halo was in its prime. I remember competing in Halo back in the day, MLG in Frisco at the Embassy in 2005. MLG at when it was here at the Hilton Anatole. That was also huge. Those were the heydays of Halo, and I wonder if there's any P1s out there that remember those, because maybe it was just in my bubble of high school friends, but Halo was the game.
Yeah, everyone played it.
And now it's like, to pull 18,000, it seems sad. That was like our little baby, and now it's...
I mean, there are games on the PlayStation that people buy the PlayStation just for that game. I mean, people bought Xboxes for that game. I mean, it was that popular. So
we'll see what happens there. In other E! News here, this is actually pretty big news. A news you broke it to me earlier today. ESL for CSGO, their Season 7 is going to end right here in Dallas.
Back at the Verizon Theater.
What was
back
it?
In May.
Was it Season 5?
Season 7.
Season 5 was the last time it was here in Dallas. Yep. Last May. About a year ago.
Yep.
And, man, if you didn't go last year, it is a good esports event to go to. If you were ever wondering kind of what like an atmosphere is, right, for a real event, ESL is one of the many pro leagues in CSGO. And I think tickets go on sale in like a couple of days for it. Well worth it.
That's a fun event. You get up close and personal with the players. The venue is cool. Good setup for it. So if you get a chance, it's 3 days out there. Even if you get a chance to go for one, I would highly recommend it. If you want to take your kid or something, it's just something neat to show them and spend a couple of hours out there.
We'll be out there too.
We will. Yep.
So if you want to say hi, we'll be out there. Right now, ESL Pro League, I'm not really sure how the standings are going, to be honest with you, considering they're broadcasting on Facebook this season. But that's...
discussion for another day.
Yeah, we don't have enough time.
I mean,
we
could talk 3 hours about that.
There's not enough time left in the show to rant about ESL moving to Facebook broadcasting, but that is the times that we live in. One other thing that I want to get on my e-news list here, Anuj, I know you have a few, is Merlini is stepping down from Dota 2 casting and analyst and just mainly the professional scene of Dota. This is a huge hit for the Dota community. Merlini, first off, he was the guy who got me into Dota. The dude has a brain like none other when it comes to explaining the game to people, right? Bringing it down to any... you want to talk about a beginner, you want to go to a pro. He'll take you all the way there and learn all the in-betweens. Dota 2 as a game would not be the same without him, and it's a shame that he has to step down. And he says basically he's getting older and he wants something more steady, and with the way the esports world works, 99% of the jobs are all contract based, right? And he's like, all these newer people wanting to get in are willing to undercut him.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough for a community too. Like, for someone like myself, when I watch the Invitational, which is the biggest Dota event in the world, I mean, the game is entertaining, but I don't understand it. I need somebody to explain it to me. So not having somebody like that is rough for the game, to bring in that new person.
Mm. So stay hard, Merlini, there. you'll see him around. He's not going anywhere, right? We were discussing this in the pre-show meeting. He's not falling on hard times. He's just finally taking that next step to saying, you know what? I don't have to travel to every event to make a living doing this. He can probably sit at home, make some YouTube videos, stream on Twitch, and get a permanent position with a team.
Yeah.
And probably make more money. So by all means, this is probably the right decision for him at this point in the game. I mean, especially with Dota. Dota's at an age where you shouldn't have to be taking undercuts.
No.
Like, it's a big enough game.
Plenty of money out there.
And I know you had some on your list here. What do you have?
So a couple things that we'll just mention real quick. The IEM Katowice for Counter-Strike is on February 27th. $500,000 prize pool. Top 16 teams in the world will be at that event. So that's one of the better events to definitely check out. And Katowice is also just another mecca for esports in general. So something definitely worth seeing there. Two others to mention. Battalion, a game we mentioned earlier as potentially the next big esport, has their first LAN event coming up. It's the Blitzkrieg Open. Starts March 30th. Be the first big event for them. That'll be an EU event. So something interesting to check out there. And then last but not least, something to keep an eye on. So I'm big on the virtual reality side. For those of you that have a Oculus by chance, there's a game coming out called Brass Tactics. It comes out this Thursday. It's from the makers of Age of Empires. I know a lot of old school gamers love that game.
Yeah.
But Brass Tactics is their RTS version in virtual reality. I got a chance to test it out this past week. Fabulous. I mean, one of the best experiences I've had in VR to date. So if you have an opportunity, it's around $25. If you buy it now, I think it's even a little bit cheaper, but worth checking out for sure.
Or if you're interested, go to Anuja's house.
Come over. Come on over. Let me know. Definitely worth it, though, but that's a fun one.
Let's get into some Twitter questions here. You have at CrayTrayVids. Hey, Trey. He asks, is the microtransaction controversy hitting esports at all? Are there strict rules about it? So honestly, there's not. You don't really deal with microtransactions in the sense of competitive advantage, right? Like you think of like with Star Wars Battlefront 2, that game was infested with them and it completely was unfair.
And ruined the game.
And it destroyed the game.
Correct.
Yeah.
You don't really deal with that in esports. The only like microtransactions that you see are all cosmetics for the most part. I know like in Overwatch, they use all base skins. So when you're even like where you're watching the Overwatch League and you'll see the teams will have their uniforms on, right? So it's like one team will be in white for away and the other team like Dallas will be in dark blues for their home uniforms in game. Well, in the actual game that the pros are using, they don't see that.
Just the base skins.
They're using base skins, right? And you'll see that in some games where they'll ban certain skins, but it's more so like if they have a competitive advantage.
Like a hitbox is different.
Hitbox or just cosmetically, right? Like if it's more difficult to see.
Stands out more or blends into the background
correct.
Or the
like
environment.
For the longest time, and I think they finally fixed this, in Overwatch, the skin for Hanzo when the game first released where he had the wolf.
Yeah.
There was a certain one that you would pick. I think it was the white one or
the white
any
wolf.
Of them.
Yeah.
Because when you used your ultimate, the howl wasn't as loud as him yelling whatever Japanese thing that he's saying, right? So people would use the wolf skin to be at a competitive advantage of not standing out as much.
Yeah.
But again, like in competitive play, everyone uses default.
It's all
skins.
For cosmetics. It's just to support the game and throw more money in it. Counter-Strike's kind of lived off of that,
yeah,
honestly. So
right. I mean, that's the way a lot of the revenue is made there. I said here at Sam Dayball, he did comment here that he knows for sure that PUBG is not going to be the next big esports. I agree with him.
I agree with him too. I mean,
agree with him as well.
It's like it goes back to our conversation before. Work on your game. And then get into the scene. They got into the scene
has
way
sailed,
too quick. Yeah,
the
I mean, it's too, but it's still buggy.
Yeah,
it's still too buggy.
And they're technically a live game now.
Yes, you finally released your game, and it's really not any better than what it was prior to it being officially a 1.0 release. And you know what? You goofed by having competitive tournaments prior. People saw that for their first impression and thought,
yeah,
nah,
it was lazy. It was
not,
super lazy.
Not that great.
And if you're playing on Xbox, God bless your soul, because that's a total mess right
it
now.
It is unplayable. And I will shout out here, because I always give a shout out to local gaming centers here. Game Night Games 1. At Game Night Games, the number 1 on Twitter. I'm assuming that's like a center around here. But he said that they actually just recently had 24 people show up for a Hearthstone regional qualifier over the weekend. So shout out to you, sir. I always support, if you ever are doing like a local LAN party, or if you're a LAN center doing a local tournament, always hit us up on Twitter. I'll retweet it any day of the week.
Yeah, because it's
how we grew up, man. That's what we used to go to.
It's only going to grow if you show up. I mean, the Overwatch League is only going to do home and away games if you see people going to the events. So, I mean, go and support your game.
Yep. All right. It is 9/11 here on the Ticket. That just about does it for us here at the Center Ring. Again, I am Tim K, alongside with Brett and Anuj. Again, you follow us up on Twitter @TheCenterRing. We'll be back next time, whenever that may be, P1s. Thank you so much.